You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Got a busy show for you today. Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman joining us after the 9:30 news for a little recap of what happened. Lots of things happened over the weekend.
Lots.
So there's a lot to catch up on. We'll do a little recap of the weekend news with Sholly Pittman right after the 9:30 news. In hour number two, very much looking forward to this. Brian Walsh is a writer for Vox.com. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Greg and I have talked about off the air quite a bit, about why we are so drawn to bad news.
What is it about the bad news that makes us tick?
And or seek it out, mm-hmm. or respond to. We've talked about, you know, when you go on vacation and you come back and you, it's like vacation was great.
Let me tell you how inconvenient all the things from vacation were.
Well, right. It's like you come back with stories about what went wrong.
Yeah.
That's, I know I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Husband, we missed the ferry because my husband was late, you know, things like that. You come back from vacation and say everything was perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you move on. So what is it about bad news that we are so drawn to, and it feeds us?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk to Brian Walsh about that in hour number two. Also in hour number two, after the 10:30 news, we lighten things up with a segment called Audio Sorbet, where we get away from the hot, heavy topics of the day and talk about lighter things.
Yeah.
Beautiful Saturday. Incredible day.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
I mean, 60s, sunny. It was perfect. Not only were people out raking leaves, they were out putting up Christmas decorations.
And guess who has opinions on that? That's Jane Matt Mayer.
Well,
Matt Mayer on Air.
So we're not at Thanksgiving is 2 weeks away, right?
No, it's a week and a half away. It's a week and some change.
Week and some change. So do you light now or do you light up after Thanksgiving?
That's a very interesting question.
I'm just curious because I saw a whole bunch of yards all lit up this morning when I was coming in with Christmas decorations.
As someone who doesn't do any of the decorations, we just don't. We want to every year. We think about it. We have three stockings that have been up since when we got Maybell, because there's Maybell stocking. But I think that's the right time, though. We're at the right time.
To light them up?
Yeah. But we'll talk more about that.
We'll kick that around for Audio Sorbet after the 10:30 news, and then we'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today, it's the Houston We Have a Problem edition. Stick around for that. Wanted to start off with this, though, from Wisconsin Public Radio. Rich Creamer has the byline. Assembly to vote on bill blocking SNAP recipients from buying candy, soft drinks, and energy drinks. GOP supporters say it's about health. Democratic opponents say it's about punishing people for living in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
SNAP government has reopened. It reopened last week. SNAP benefits are supposed to start running again, perhaps with a few delays. But with the government reopened and uncertainty about SNAP payments, Republicans in Wisconsin now going to vote this week on a measure that will restrict what SNAP recipients can buy. Under the proposal up for the vote Wednesday in the assembly, soft drinks, candy, and energy drinks will no longer be allowed to be purchased using SNAP benefits. Republicans say it's about improving low-income residents' health. They say taxpayers shouldn't be paying for junk food.
There it is.
Critics call it an effort to punish people living in poverty.
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter than it is the former. They don't care about health. They don't care about nutrition. They never did.
And I think what's difficult when we're talking about this is they're ignoring the whole food desert issue. There aren't grocery stores in lots of parts of the state.
Yep.
So you have to go to your Quick Trip or your gas station or whatever, mm-hmm. the closest approximation to a grocery store.
Yeah.
And that's where you shop.
Jane, I don't care about them. They should just do what I say.
Well, they can get to a grocery store.
There's a Whole Foods down the street from me.
Yeah, Whole Foods. Yeah. Yes.
This notion of it's about the health and that they don't care. If they look, okay, nice try. Good quote. Fancy words. If you really cared like you do about education, you'd have a plan. You'd fund it. You'd fund things like nutrition programs. Maybe, I don't know, like a free breakfast and lunch school programs, maybe for kids. I think that's a good start.
That would be caring for children.
Yeah, maybe. I know they are not the ones who have put forth this program. But when we cancel programs that don't allow even farmers to bring their fresh fruits and vegetables to food pantries, even access to that is going away. So therefore, they have less choice. And yes, there are places in the world where you can buy some groceries at gas stations, and there. Luckily, we have places that like a little bit bigger, like your Quick Trips. We're getting a Buc-ee's. I know when Buc-ee's comes around, there will be wider variety. But not everyone has that choice either. And to just summarily say no for this because we all of a sudden care about your nutrition. I'm sorry, but that is a lie.
Well, if there were so many concerns about nutrition, then when Michelle Obama was first lady mm-hmm. and attempted to make school lunches healthier, yeah. I believe there was some pretty strong reaction from the right about that.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't
Sarah Palin handing out freedom cookies?
Mm-hmm. And they had to work it around and make it from a fresh fruits and veggies program to just getting out in the world and, like, you know, getting your kids out for like 60 minutes a day and playing. And
let's move.
And I know that with regard to the farmers thing, as I was talking about, it's a matter of there was a program. There was an actual federal program that paid farmers to grow food, and that food then could be given to food pantries. The Trump administration stopped that. That's what I'm talking about. It's not a matter of like prohibition or laws. It's a matter of that the program that paid our farmers, because they need money, they need help, they need to grow food, they need the money to do their job, was canceled. And now that food, I'm not saying the farmers can't do it, but it was very nice that there was a program that incentivized farmers to grow that food, which gave it to our local pantries, which could feed our local people. But that's gone. But all of a sudden, they care about nutrition.
A USDA website about the waivers says the Trump administration is, quote, leading bold reform to strengthen integrity and restore nutritional value, unquote, within SNAP. So far, 12 states, including Florida, Colorado, Texas, and Indiana, have applied. They do expect to have various restrictions on soda and candy in place next year. In March, Bob Kennedy Jr. was promoting the waivers. The bill here in Wisconsin, introduced by Representative Clint Moses, a Republican from Menominee, and State Senator Chris Kapenga, a Republican from Delafield.
Kapenga.
Sorry about that.
I've been saying that name wrong for months. So yeah. It's look. I'm all for nutrition too. And you want to strike a healthy balance, no pun intended. Then you put forth dollars that help create sustainable programs which promote health nutrition for children, for adults who need it. But just to say we're getting rid of this because we care about you don't care about it. You don't. Don't try to convince me you do, because you'll never do that.
855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, talking about a measure that is coming up in the Wisconsin Assembly on Wednesday that will restrict SNAP recipients from buying candy, soft drinks, and energy drinks with their SNAP benefits. There are some groups that are opposed to this, including, let me see here, Feeding Wisconsin, Milwaukee Hunger Task Force, along with associations representing grocery stores and gas stations. Mm. Supporters include the Chiropractic Society of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Naturopathic Doctors Association, mm-hmm. Wisconsin Property Taxpayers Incorporated, and conservative free market advocacy groups.
It's funny though, Jane, when you like, we don't have the time to do this, but if you take a look at all those groups and you go down rabbit holes, you find out just how conservative they are and where they use their dollars. And it's really no, I mean, I'm surprised dentists didn't get involved either, but it's funny when you read who gives the money.
A fiscal estimate from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services says the department will incur around $6 million in costs.
There it is.
In order to set up this database of soft drink and of candy and soft drink products, Department of Health and Human Services says Wisconsin has 3.5 positions already dedicated to investigating suspected SNAP fraud. Unknown if they would need more people to then enforce that ban.
Boy, Jane, this sounds like another edition of Solutions in Search of a Problem, but now we have to pay.
Well, again, coming up with something and then not looking about possible consequences.
Not consequences.
Down the road.
Or programs that are true investments of the people's time and money to create a stronger, healthier, more productive population, a more productive state. No, it's just we're gonna make a big old Excel spreadsheet, and you can't buy Pepsi. Sorry.
855-752-4842. Gene from Eau Claire joining us on the line. Good morning, Gene. You get the word on this before we go to break. What'd you want to say?
What a bunch of smucks! I'll tell you something. They got cruel and vindictive behaviors. Mm-hmm. You know what? Where did they get their nutritional degrees? These guys make me sick. You know, I got to tell you, I'm getting sick of their behaviors. They're trying to tell everybody what to do. Meanwhile, they don't do anything worth for the state. We got to vote those people out. I got to say, we do not want those people that are in our government right now, in our federal government, making decisions, those Republicans, supporting Trump. I mean, this is just, I can't believe it, guys. It's like I'm in La La Land every day of all the crap that they're pulling on the people. So I just had to have my voice heard. Thank you for taking my call and keep up the great work keeping us informed.
Thanks a lot, Gene. Really appreciate it.
We try our best to do it every day.
And
it's just very frustrating because I'll say it again. They never cared about it. Well, they always had a problem with people buying soda and candy. And I understand the concern about using SNAP benefits. I get that concern. That's where you have a conversation and talk about these things. But then to turn it around and we're just so worried about the health.
Worried. It's about the children.
But as you put it in too, the bigger conversation is, well, what about these folks in cities and rural and everywhere in the state who don't have access to these grocery stores or don't have close access?
Actually, Bob Jr. has the answer for that. They should just take Ozempic so they're not hungry.
That's true. He literally
say that out loud.
A solution for people in food deserts is having better access to food, better access to Ozempic. Big pharma medicine, Bob Jr.
That's going to fix it.
Is there alcohol in my coffee today?
Not yet. When we return, cows jumping over walls. Oh, my goodness. The beef.
Where's the beef?
It's jumping over the walls.
It's illegally coming to this country.
All the details coming up. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Mayer on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, Sweet Gal B coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. Join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 9:30 news, Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman will be here to do a little recap of some of the things from the weekend that you might have missed. Right now, I wanted to spend a little time about this. When I surf over the weekend, and sometimes I think I heard things wrong.
Yeah.
And you have to go back and listen to them like 4, 5, 25 times to make sure that you heard it right.
Sure.
That was kind of the case when I heard this over the weekend. Our Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Neckbrace-Bissent, was talking to Maria Bartiromo on Fox over the weekend about beef prices and why beef prices are still so high. The CEO of the Omaha Steak Company, it's been around for a really long time.
People have mailed me their food.
He said last week that we are heading toward $10 a pound ground beef.
Okay, That feels about right. That's where we're at.
Now we know why we're having beef issues. Kevin, let's play that clip, please, from our Treasury Secretary, Scott Bissent, talking to Maria Bartiromo, Ron Johnson's favorite person.
But what is your take on what you just heard? He's expecting $10 meat.
Well, Maria, the beef market is a very specialized market. It goes in long cycles, and this is the perfect storm. Again, something we inherited, and there's also, because of the mass immigration, a disease that had been we've been rid of. In North America, made its way up through South America. As these migrants, they brought some of their cattle with them. So part of the problem is we've had to shut the border to Mexican beef because of this disease called the screw worm. So we're not going to let that get into our supply chain. And again, I don't want to focus on one product. It's a very important product, and we are laser focused on this issue. And
the way he's talking about it, he is laser focused, folks.
But they were bringing cows with them. Yeah. They're bringing drugs and crime and cows. You know, when I think of all the visuals that the Republicans provided of the caravans of immigrants that were heading towards America, I missed all the visuals of the herds of cows they were bringing along with them.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, see.
Are you seeing pictures of them sneaking in cows?
Actually, I asked the question and Google said, what?
Even Grok said, no.
Yeah, it's talking about the screw worm parasite outbreak. That's very difficult to say. Near the border that has halted U.S. imports of Mexican cattle and ongoing debates about the role of undocumented. Now, do we get cattle from Mexico?
Yes.
Probably, yes. But as far as them bringing the undocumented folks, bringing that up through wherever they are trying to illegally enter the country, I don't know how that works unless there is some sort of big gate that I don't know about where all they can illegally bring cattle in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there were memes over the weekend all over Twitter of cows standing on the shoulders of other cows to get over the wall. It's pretty funny, actually.
If you listen to him talk, though, too, he's searching for things to say. And at this point, it just becomes why not sprinkle some other things in there and be like, the reason why the beef is so expensive is because the illegal immigrants are bringing in illegal cows and they're trying to take away your Second Amendment rights and your jobs as well.
Pile some more stuff in there.
And some of those cows were dressed as drag queens, too.
Calvin, I want to play one more clip as we're talking about the cost of things, because another Trump administration official on MSNBC talking about, things are great, you guys. I don't know what everybody is complaining about. Calvin, let's play that clip from Kevin Hassett, please, about purchasing power.
Now, inflation is still 3%. It's still too high. Now, oil prices, energy prices, there are certain things where they have come down. But when you keep saying prices are falling, that's not true. Because inflation the 3% is on top of all the inflation we had during the Biden years. So we got all that inflation plus an additional 3%. And we should,
a more precise way to say it, though, Joe, is that purchasing power has gone up. And so real wages, that's W divided by P for our technical people in the audience, have gone up by about $1,200 this year. So the way to think about it is that we've dug a $3,000 hole because of Biden policies and we've you know, gained $1,200 on the way out already, which should give you a great deal of hope for the future that the wage increases that we're seeing will continue. And even if inflation stays positive, make it so that people feel way better when they go to the grocery store and to buy a car. You know, we've reduced the cost of buying a car with the deductibility of interest. I mean, there's a million things that we're doing to fix this problem. But it's just kind of astonishing to me that the cost problem is somehow being blamed on us. Now,
first of all, Jane, a million is a lot.
It is a lot.
I'd love to hear just maybe one through 12 ways, let alone a million.
I just saw a report last week that said that the average price of a car now is $50,000. The average price of a car.
But now it's cheaper because you just take the taxes, I guess, and there's a...
Is that what
I don't know. I have no idea.
Just ignore the prices you're seeing at the stores, you guys. Could you just do that? That would take so much pressure off the Trump administration. Let's do them all a favor. Just say everything is perfect.
Everything's perfect, and if it's not perfect, it's Joe Biden's fault.
That's right. News is next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our home at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk to Brian Walsh from Vox.com. He is a writer for Vox, and he has a good news column.
Yes.
Which all of us are going, really?
What good news?
What good news?
How could it be good news?
We're going to talk to him about why we are so attracted. Why are our brains wired for bad?
Mm-hmm.
Because bad news gets traction. Bad news. Whoops.
Makes you throw your pen.
Pen across the room at Greg. Bad news.
Did you guys hear that Jane threw her pen at me?
Bad news and anger and throwing pens creates clicks.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
yes.
It does. So we're going to talk about what it is about humanity, why it is we are so drawn to bad news instead of things to celebrate.
Yeah.
That's coming up after 10 o'clock. Right now, our news director for Civic Media, Shally Pittman, is here. She joins us every Monday.
Really feel like you set her up there. It's like
to do an update
on
all the things happening. Because a lot of stuff happens that we just can't keep up with. I call it a fire hose.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about what's going on in Wisconsin, Shally, as far as the school report that just came out.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. And yeah, thank you for that setup. I used to get that comment a lot, by the way. Why do you only do bad news? And I'm like, these things are happening.
Yeah.
And you have to, I mean, as a news reporter, because you are a news person, that is newsworthy when, you know, there's deadly accidents or deadly shootings or all of those things. Those are newsworthy. But again, when we look at some media models and even influencers, outrage fuels clicks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then our algorithms continue to feed us that kind of stuff.
But when we want to come for the real news, the real stories, that's when we talk to Shally Pittman.
Exactly. So let's talk about the report card on Wisconsin schools.
Yeah. So, you know, in coming up with topics for your show, I try to pick things that lots of listeners across the state might be interested in. And I think this is one that almost everyone can get behind, can go and look up. So the Department of Public Instruction, which oversees Wisconsin schools, obviously we've talked about them before and there's been a lot going on there. But the Department of Public Instruction released school report cards last week. Now these are mandated by state statute. They have to do it every year. And they are exactly what they sound like. They're report cards for every school district in Wisconsin. Kind of shows you how your school's doing in comparison to other districts. And so it uses data from previous school years. Now, what's different this year is that it uses new ratings based on a kind of five-star system of expectations.
Okay.
And that's new. They used different standards before. These standards are based on educator recommendations from earlier this summer that were then adopted and approved by DPI Superintendent Jill Underley. So schools are scored on a variety of metrics, including for what they call priority areas, which are achievement, growth, target group outcomes, and on track to graduation, which uses things like absentee rates. So you can go look up those numbers. It takes a little bit to decode. I had some reporters doing stories last week on these, and I did have to go and look up how to interpret the report card side by side with specific report cards
sure.
for school mm-hmm. districts, but you can do it. And, you know, it is kind of fine-grained data into how your district is doing. Now, there are some limitations with looking these up, and DPI itself says you should hesitate to make direct comparisons between school and district scores, comparing schools with each other, because it's not exactly one-to-one. There are certain weighting mechanisms, which is also mandated by state statute. So critics say you can't compare school results. You know, critics have been vocal about the fact that there are new kind of accountability ratings on this set of expectations. However, you know, DPI is also required to weight these based on the percentage of economically disadvantaged students. And so that's part of why it's hard to compare.
So like you're saying, you can't just take the results from MPS and compare it to the school district in Bondwell, for example, because there are differentiating factors.
It precisely. And it might give some idea, right? But it's, again, this is why folks have objected to it, because it's hard to make apples to apples comparisons.
Right.
Here's another point about the report cards. 94% of the public school districts that were ranked are meeting or exceeding expectations. And there was no school district in Wisconsin that received one star, which would be an F, right? That's according to reporting from WPR. So, you know, take it how you want, but that's an interesting kind of note about these report cards.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, Civic Media News Director Shally Pittman is our guest to do a little recap of some news that you might have missed over the weekend. One of the things that I saw, Shally, that kind of jumped out at me, voters are tired on about school referendums. Voters are getting exhausted with having to essentially vote to increase their property taxes to make up for the lack of funds that they're getting from the state. And from this report, it's like people are tired.
Yeah, well, these, the, you know, voter attitudes on referendums or anything in there isn't explicitly mentioned in the school report cards. But I did want to kind of draw a parallel between the report cards and these, because we've had some reporters, again, asking district officials, what do you think about this report card? What are you pointing to in success, or, you know, yada, yada. And we had one report from James Kelly out of Chippewa Falls and Eau Claire that should be running today. And he spoke with school district officials, and they said, look, we're really grateful that, or we attribute the success of these report cards or of our school district to voters who have opted to raise their own property taxes to make sure that our schools are serving our youngest members of our community. Now, there was a record number of school funding referendums on the ballot last year. That's according to data from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. There were 241 school referenda on the ballot, both last August and November in 2024 and 103 in the spring. And that surpasses a record set in 1998.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
So school districts are asking for money from local residents, and specifically those referendums are asking voters to to increase property taxes above the levy limit that's been set by the state legislature. Voters approved about 70% of those referendums in 2024, but I wanted to kind of link this to another news item, which is the Marquette School poll, the law school poll that was just released, I think last week or earlier this month. You know, there's a lot in there, right?
Yes.
But they also asked voters if they would be inclined to vote against a referendum, a school referendum. And for the first time, 57% said they'd vote against a school referendum and 43% said they'd vote for it. So the winds might be shifting now.
Yeah.
We can only read so much into that. We don't know why. But the Marquette Law School poll has also showed that opposition to referendums has increased since 2016. So, you know, if schools are pointing to their success, part of that is
the
money,
referendum,
right?
Yeah.
Money from local residents,
yep.
Right? That might be forecasting something in the future. The last thing I'll mention is that last month, DPI released data that 70% of public school districts are going to get less general school aid in the next school year. $350 million of that general aid will be diverted to voucher schools. So...
So,
you know, just wrapping up all the headlines for you.
Just to reiterate that point that you just made, Shelly, our public schools are going to lose out on funding because we're sending that money to a separate school system, our voucher schools. Right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because I'm seeing a lot of the report card story being taken out of context and using it to lambast the school system here in Wisconsin. And I say that because I want people to, one, listen to this conversation, but also I will put in the show notes all of the references that Shelly is making, all the stories in there, so people can really understand. Because when it comes to the school system, I am one of the 30% that
voted for it.
We voted against.
Oh, you voted against?
Kenosha voted against an increase in our sales tax. I voted for it, but Kenosha, ultimately, that measure failed. And the fact that we're seeing people starting to say, like, I'm getting a little, it's getting me a lot. Like, you're asking me to, you know, where are the other resources? And,
right.
So I want people to check out the show notes on civicmedia.us. Look at our show. Look for the first hour for today. Read these stories because a lot of people can make a lot of claims, but we need to be looking at the fact that our schools are actually doing well. And yes, as you said, the help coming from the increased property tax is good, but we also need a partnership in the state. But I'm thank you for breaking this down for us today, Shelly. I really appreciate that.
855-752-4842. Jack from Merrimack on the line. Good morning, Jack. Thanks for joining us. What did you want to say?
People need to be reminded of a few things. Like, for instance, last budget, the governor line item vetoed to allow school districts, allow referenda in school districts so that the schools could increase their funding as necessary. Up to, I think it's $325 a student. In the meantime, our wonderful legislature rammed through in their version of the budget, which was eventually signed, a $3,000 per student increase in private school welfare vouchers. This is an absolute attempt to destroy as much as possible the funding ability of public schools. Understand that they don't need a referendum to do that. This
yeah.
was money that the legislature actually paid out of the surplus. Of course, they didn't give any of the surplus to our public schools. Now,
appreciate it. Thanks, Jack. We're coming up against the clock. So, yeah, that's that seems pretty generous.
Yeah.
$3,000 per student
mm.
for voucher schools and private schools. We're going to continue our conversation with Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, our one hour so only Calzone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. Good morning, live stream. On Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. She joins us every Monday to do a little recap of the news. Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman is here. Sholly, we're going to move on to the end of the shutdown as of today.
And I mean, you guys have talked about this a lot, right? So, you know, I just wanted to recap. I was in Park Falls over the last week, and it had me thinking about how the federal government reaches into all sorts of communities, because I was walking past the Department of Forestry, which had a big close sign in the window because of the shutdown.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And there was a sign in the window very explicitly saying, "We are shut down because of the lapse in government funding." So obviously the shutdown is over. The longest shutdown in history is over. The deal that's signed funds most federal agencies until January 30th. The deal that's signed also funds other programs through the fiscal year. So SNAP, WIC, the Department of Ag, Congress, and Veterans Affairs are funded through next September. The shutdown includes, or the deal includes, back pay for federal workers. One note, I don't know if I always watch the air traffic controllers and what they're doing when we're in shutdown time, because they carry a unique amount of leverage.
No doubt.
Last time they sued the government to get overtime and other compensation. And so even though that overtime has been promised, that back pay, if we're following the model that happened in 2019, then we might see some more news headlines coming out of that. We don't know yet, though.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to say I find it interesting that during a government shutdown, what we consider critical in order to keep things moving, I don't understand why we didn't pay our air traffic controllers and not our Congress people during the shutdown. When we're talking about who is critical in order to keep things going, I think, I don't know, call me crazy, air traffic controllers would have been my pick over the congressman. But that's just me. Anyway, sorry, shall I continue?
There's a story from NPR that interviewed a controller in the interview. And by the way, Wisconsin's own Sean Duffy, Secretary of Transportation, right, was speaking earlier during the shutdown about, you know, you can't call out sick, right, and telling controllers that they can't do that.
Questioning questioning their patriotism, Sean Duffy was.
But there was a controller who NPR spoke with who said that he had just gotten, or they had just gotten a check, right before this shutdown from
the last time
the government shut down.
What? So, better late than never, folks.
It's a good story. So anyway, obviously, Democrats were holding out for health insurance subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. They didn't get those, but there's another vote in December. I also noted, and I don't know if you've talked about this, the deal that signed makes it illegal for federal prosecutors to search senators' phone records without notice, right? And it provides a financial penalty.
Yes, we did.
A financial penalty also applies to Wisconsin's own, Wisconsin's own Ron Johnson was one of those eight Republican senators.
Yes,
where it would apply.
I called and left him a message about that, actually.
I've been in Park Falls, Jane. So
nothing happens.
Nothing happens in Park Falls.
No, that's not true. It's lovely. We love it there. We love it there.
We do love Park Falls.
Yeah. The many Wisconsins, right?
Yes.
And then it also reverses the 2018 Farm Bill loophole for cannabis and hemp, which I know you did talk about, mm-hmm. and I'm glad you talked about it. Now, that'll happen a year from now, right? Or
but that's another thing that they slipped in there without telling anybody that this was going to be part of this deal. And there's a lot of anger now directed at the Democrats who voted in favor of this measure, because either they knew that piece was in there about mm-hmm. this hemp measure, or they didn't read it. And that's not a good look either.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand the criticism of where we are. You walk down State Street and there are a lot of dispensaries and it's sort of a Wild West. That's according mm-hmm. to a city attorney in La Crosse, right? But if your answer is guardrails, which is, you know, limiting the sale to people over 21, many communities across Wisconsin are already doing that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they're obviously... legislative bodies get to do what legislative bodies do, but you know, this is an unregulated industry and
which is generating quite a bit of profits. And just call me crazy, but I think that there are other entities in Wisconsin that would like to get a share of those profits, and that's what this is about. That's just me.
That's just me.
This is federal, right? But in Wisconsin, right? It's we'll see what happens next fall. Mm-hmm. But it does mirror the other kind of banning of other things that you can inhale, right? Which is in Wisconsin, which is nicotine, right?
Yeah.
It's become harder to find those as well. So. And I don't know. I just wanted to round up the shutdown for you. You already did that, but
appreciate it.
Yeah. And I just want to mention really quick, too, Hubertus State Representative Jim Pivovarczyk, gosh, that's a hard name to say. Pivovarczyk is trying to put forth legislation that will kind of codify the language of the federal into the state. So it's like once and for all. And he has no love, no sympathy, no anything for that industry. And we talked about that last week with Erin Kelly.
She's going to be back.
She'll be back.
And I have her back.
Thank you very much, though, Sholly, for bringing up the roundup on the, especially on the shutdown.
Civic Media's news director, Sholly Pittman, joins us every Monday for a recap. Thank you, my friend. We will see you next week. News is coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.